And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson. Joining me for this Week 8 Rewind is Mr. Tom Fornelli, live from Chicago. Tom, very sorry about your Bears as you join me on this Sunday afternoon. Not exactly a whole lot of defense over there in their matchup with the Redskins, huh?
No, I felt like I was watching yesterday's Texas A&M Auburn game all over again.
And of course, that game that that Tom just mentioned was part of a Week 8 that, frankly, we here at the Eye on College Football podcast have been calling for quite some time, because we introduced these topics regarding whether or not we're going to have five undefeateds, or what kind of logjam are we going to have right here at the end of the year. And on a day, or at the weekend as a whole, this was sort of starting to continue the upset theme from the week before. Five of the top 11 lose, eight of the top 25. Tom, we should have seen it coming. Thursday night, I'm over there in Chapel Hill watching Miami do almost everything to give the game to North Carolina before North Carolina just handed it right back. Dallas Crawford coming through there in the fourth quarter. Friday night, you've got eyes in Louisville, Kentucky, where Blake Bortles just turns into a superhuman leading a game-winning drive. Louisville Cardinals out of the BCS race. We will get to both of those games, Miami UNC and Louisville Central Florida, in a bit. But, Tom, you know what we're about to get down to, but of all of the upsets, which one caught you off guard the most?
I would say the Missouri-Florida one, simply because, although I knew Florida wasn't exactly, you know, a world beater, especially since Driscoll's been hurt, I felt like Matty Mock, you know, making that first career start against a Florida defense, even at home, I didn't like his odds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And he really didn't play great, although he didn't make huge mistakes. And I think, that's what I think was the difference, was because he didn't make the big mistake, and Missouri was able to get, you know, to actually move the ball pretty well on a Florida defense. And that was the biggest shock to me, too. Not just that Missouri won, but how many points they put on the board while doing so.
Yeah, and everything we heard about Matty Mock, who has not played a game since high school, is that he sort of gets out there. He likes to sling it around a little bit, take some chances. And I thought, knowing that from his profile, from his recruitment, that this would be perfect for Florida's defense, mm-hmm. that wonderful secondary. I was like, oh, yeah, there's going to be three picks in this game, and Florida will win 10-3.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was expecting. I was expecting Matty Mock to throw a lot of interceptions.
All right, but we are going to start with really what was billed as sort of the game of the week of the century, biggest game in ACC history. Even I said on this show during one of our record-tying four podcasts in 1 week. Good job, Tom, by the way.
Thank you.
Very proud of us for that.
Me too.
But really, Florida State just shut down Clemson. They go into Death Valley, completely take down that high octane attack, and it is when both quarterbacks, remember a Heisman Trophy showdown between Jameis Winston and Taj Boyd, when both quarterbacks leave the field, it's 51-7. The Seminoles just working them. So outside of the result, 51-14 Florida State, what was the most surprising aspect of this game to you?
How completely inept that Clemson looked on offense, particularly Taj Boyd, who had a terrible game, especially by Taj Boyd standards. And I'm not surprised that Clemson lost to Florida State. And it's like you mentioned the deficit. It was just what surprised me is more than the deficit was just how much Florida State absolutely dominated that entire game. I mean, it felt from, you know, 5 minutes in, you kind of already knew Clemson wasn't going to win.
Yeah, and what little bit of hope that they had near the end of the first quarter, after Taj Boyd has there was a fumble that is taken back for a touchdown to make it 17-0. The Tigers get the ball right back, and Taj Boyd does put together an 11-play, 65-yard touchdown drive, 17-7. Death Valley wakes up, and then, Tom, let's review the next drives for the Clemson Tigers. 7 yards punt, 6 yards punt, 51 yards. Hey, Tom. Interception.
Hey, got the 50.
27 yards punt. 51 yards interception. And 17 yards turnover on downs. That was the entire second and third quarter with, like you said, Clemson's high-powered offense shut down. Bruce Feldman pointed out in the big picture, not a single play over 19 yards in this game for a Clemson offense that leads definitely the ACC, possibly even the country in play explosion plays, maybe a 60 or more or something like that. Are you afraid at all that this is going to shake Clemson? I mean, they only fell to number 10 in the AP poll, and they go at Maryland, at Virginia, Georgia Tech on a Thursday at home, then at South Carolina. What are you seeing for the Tigers' finish, and is it possible, it's assuming that Florida State is not going to lose twice to ACC opponents from here on out, do you think Clemson could sneak back in and possibly get a BCS at-large bid?
Yeah, I think Clemson's still very much in play for BCS bid, just because if Florida State can work its way to the national title game, which, I mean, is a very good possibility looking at the remaining schedule, Clemson's got, you know, the next 2 weeks it's on the road against Maryland and Virginia, and Maryland's pretty much lost its entire starting team in the last few weeks. I mean, what, they're down 11 starters right now, I think I saw.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs and Deion Long, two.
Are the latest, yeah.
Yeah, not only starting wide receivers, but star wide receivers, probably the most talented players on that offense, out for the season.
Correct. And then the week after that, you get a road game against Virginia, which is a team that's pretty much just counting down the days until it's over. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Georgia Tech and Citadel, those are winnable games at home. And you finish against South Carolina. And if they can knock off South Carolina in that final week of the season, that's certainly going to give them that BCS push to where they could get an at-large, maybe even go to the Orange Bowl, you know, if Florida State bumps up to the national title game. So Clemson's season is not over yet. Last night hurt, no doubt about it, but they still got quite a bit left to play for.
Yeah, there is definitely still quite a bit. SEC West is... the SEC East is crazy. The SEC West is crazy. We are just sort of in a weird state of, is it parity? Is this a weak season? Regardless of what side of the fence you stay on, the SEC's BCS title chances right now pretty much laying with what, Alabama and Missouri?
I mean, you know, it's the end of October just about. There are three teams in the SEC with one loss or, you know, undefeated, and they're Auburn, Missouri, and Alabama, just like we knew was going to be the case coming into this season.
I mean, this is the streak of SEC teams winning national championships could potentially come to an end. I'm not going to say that it comes to an end now. Obviously, Alabama, 52-0 over Arkansas, they're doing fine. They have... Absolutely, white people.
I don't mean any disrespect to Missouri or even Auburn, but let's be real. Alabama's the SEC's only national title hope at this point.
Which is wild. I mean, and this happens, of course, if you have not tuned in. You got Ole Miss at home. They pick off Mettenberger three times. LSU just really not prepared for this game. Les Miles in his postgame presser said, I did a piss-poor job of preparing this football team. They just didn't.
That is a direct quote, by the way, for those who didn't hear it.
Yeah, that is a direct quote. What do you get? What do you make out of this one? Because Ole Miss was absolutely depleted on defense. Bo Wallace played pretty well, but I wouldn't say that they necessarily won the game. And you know, LSU even marched back and had a chance to steal it. I didn't walk away from this necessarily saying, "Oh, well, look at Ole Miss. Maybe they can. You know, maybe they've turned things around." However, after losing close to A&M, I think it was big for Hugh Freeze, for those fans, and for that young team at home to not lose another close game, blowing a lead like they did against the Aggies.
Yeah, I don't know if you're – I mean, it's a huge win for the Rebels, and I don't know if it's a turning the corner win, though. I mean, it's like LSU did do a lot to beat itself with the three turnovers. Mettenberger had a Jordan Jefferson tribute game there. But, I mean, to give them credit, Ole Miss was dealing with injuries on the defensive side of the ball. And even with the turnovers, they still held LSU, which has been a fantastic offense all year long, to 388 yards total. And only LSU finished with 114 yards rushing, but it needed 35 attempts to get there, which is very surprising because Ole Miss's run defense really hadn't been very good this season, but they did a very good job of slowing down LSU, which forced them to pass and which kind of led to Mettenberger's interception. So you have to give the Rebels a lot of the credit, but LSU certainly helped them out.
Yes, certainly. The other game, Auburn, like you mentioned, a one-loss team in the SEC. I mean, they're 6-1. They're 3-1 in conference play. They are using the standard Gus Malzahn up-tempo attack, but they are really doing it with a focus on running the ball, using Trey Mason, Corey Grant, and Cameron Artis Payne as sort of a three-headed monster just running right at A&M. We knew A&M's defensive line might potentially struggle with this. Did you anticipate this? I mean, Johnny Manziel has the injury scare. He comes back, but Mike Evans with a huge day, but they are just not able to overcome what they are missing at the heart of that defensive line right now.
You know, this game basically played out exactly how I thought it would, except I had Texas A&M winning. It was you mentioned Auburn's a fantastic rushing offense. A&M is a terrible rushing defense. So I knew Auburn was going to be able to play, you know, a tennis match type of football game going back and forth up and down the field. I just had serious doubts about Auburn being able to stop Manziel as well. And, I mean, Manziel missed a couple series with the injuries. And in this game, I mean, those were huge because
yeah.
The Aggies couldn't do anything on offense once he left the game for that series and a half. And those are lost points that really came, you know, to effect at the end. So I it's not to take anything away from Auburn because they deserve to win the game, but it pretty much played exactly like I thought it would. And if it hadn't been for that Manziel injury or maybe for that missed horse collar tackle there at the end that they didn't call, the outcome could have been very much different.
Yeah, a lot of credit. Also here, I think this was a game that stood out, even though, you know, Auburn gave up 41 points. Defensive coordinator Ellis Johnson has a young second line to that Auburn defensive front, so they are just rotating bodies in and out. They run about 9 deep, and man, they did a great job of getting after Johnny Manziel and containing him. And if they can have a good defensive front and a really, really strong defensive front, that's perfect for what Ellis Johnson wants to do. And it's also, as we've seen before, when it works, a perfect complement to an offense that's going to be trying to put up a lot of points.
Yeah, there's a lot of young talent on that defensive line that, you know, you got to give Gene Chizik some credit for that. He had a lot to do with recruiting those guys to Auburn in the last years. But to your point, when was the last time you remember seeing Manziel under that kind of pressure like he was yesterday?
I know, Alabama.
Yeah, that's the only other time you see it. And with that Auburn defensive line and that front seven, as that group matures and they bring in even more talent, this is a team under Malzahn with that offense that we know is scoring a ton of points. That defense is going to improve. We're looking at an Auburn team that, you know, this kind of second place in the SEC West might not be something so rare in the immediate future.
Yeah, what do you think is a realistic expectation for Gus Malzahn just sort of looking ahead with Alabama, with Texas A&M, with LSU, with Hugh Freeze getting Ole Miss together? This is, like we said, a lot of excitement. Auburn still has at Arkansas, at Tennessee. They get Georgia at home, and then they get the Iron Bowl at home. Arkansas, winnable game. Tennessee, winnable game. Georgia, who knows how healthy they're going to be, but they come to Jordan-Hare, where Auburn is undefeated so far this season. What are you thinking for this team at the end of the season?
I think they're going to win their next two games against FAU and on the road against Arkansas. That road game against Tennessee looks a lot harder, though, because the Vols have been playing very well the last few weeks, particularly at home. The Georgia game, that's winnable, but again, like you said, it depends on the injuries, too. If they're back and healthy, it's a lot tougher, but it really could come down to the Iron Bowl. The Iron Bowl could end up settling the SEC West champion, which, you know, is fine by me because that game's fun enough on its own as it is, and when it has something that important on the line, even better.
Sorry, I just started cracking up thinking about the argument of whether a one-loss Auburn team deserves to be in over an undefeated Oregon team.
No, but I think it'd be more Ohio State at that point.
Yeah. I just thought about it.
But yeah, I don't look forward to that I hope teams start losing soon, rest of them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And look, all that mayhem, and we are just now getting over to the SEC East, which is which is Missouri in front. We just talked about 36-17, Missouri's win over Florida, puts them in the driver's seat. Here's what they've got left as far as the SEC schedule goes. They get South Carolina at home this week. They get Tennessee at home, on the road at Kentucky, on the road at Ole Miss, then a season finale against Texas A&M in Columbia. So many intriguing matchups on that schedule. Three or four games that could potentially be losses, but I'm going to say with the wins against Georgia and Florida already, and Georgia and Florida both 3-2 in conference, both 4-3 overall. Very boring cocktail party ahead this week. I think if they beat South Carolina, they are pretty close to having the East locked up.
Yeah, pretty much, because they'll be able to lose twice in their last four, and they'll have a tiebreaker over everybody that they're actually, you know, contending with. So this week, this weekend's game is huge against South Carolina, and South Carolina's not going to have Connor Shaw. So Missouri's catching a bit of Missouri's been catching a lot of breaks this year, and it's not, you know, that's not to knock what they've done, but when you look at the Georgia game, you know, Georgia's entire team was out. Florida's hadn't been the same without Driscoll on offense, and then now South Carolina's losing its starting quarterback. You know, even with James Franklin out and with Matty Mock's performance, like we talked about earlier, this is a team to me that I think just generally might be the best team in the SEC East, not just record, but just the best team on the field right now.
Wow. Yeah, I've got no it stinks a little bit, but just because so many of these teams have been impacted by injuries. But is it weird that I kind of like it? I like that we're having just sort of this chaos. I would never wish injuries on anybody.
Oh, I love chaos. I hate injuries, but no, I love the chaos. Chaos is what makes this sport fun.
Yeah, this is really, really wild. Again, Missouri at South Carolina. And are you giving Missouri the edge against the Gamecocks?
Yeah, if Shaw's not playing. I mean, I know it's a position that South Carolina's been in every week, but at home in Columbia, Florida found out how tough Missouri could be there. And without Shaw and with just South Carolina being so bipolar this year, I mean, Jadeveon Clowney finally showed up this week, but it didn't really mean much to South Carolina in the end. So I don't know which Gamecock team's going to show up, but I kind of have a good feeling that the good Missouri team is going to show up, because the good Missouri team has showed up every week so far this season.
Tennessee beat South Carolina 23-21. When Shaw goes down, Dylan Thompson comes in, and they're just not able to get the first downs they need to milk the clock. They let Tennessee back into the game, and Tennessee was able to get down and get two fourth-quarter field goals on the Gamecocks. Not a great game for the Gamecocks defense. Both Kelsey Quarles goes down with an injury. They've got already injuries in the defensive backfield. But Tennessee, man, they and Bruce covered this a lot, and in the big picture, this is a team that, according to Butch Jones, is just really embracing a lot of the cool story, you know, believe in yourself type vibe, and things are turning around. Are you going to buy Tennessee with under Butch Jones, as this is the beginning of something special, like a pendulum swinging time, or do you think that this is just the next shiny thing that we're excited about?
I've thought since the beginning that Butch Jones was a great hire for the school, and what Butch already had yesterday in that win over South Carolina is the one thing that Dooley never had during his time here. You know, they were waiting for that big win.
Yeah.
And it never really came with Dooley, but Butch Jones already has it. And now I still think Tennessee is going to have a tough time getting to a bowl game this year, because it needs two more wins. And in the next 3 weeks, it's playing on the road against Alabama and Missouri, and then it gets Auburn at home. And those are three tough games in a row. So I'm looking at their schedule saying they're going to have to beat Vanderbilt and Kentucky to finish the year to get to six wins. But still, getting to six wins or even 5-7, just with the way that this team has played, I think is just a very good indication of how things are going to go in the future. Because this is, you just watch this Tennessee team play, and it's a much better team than we've seen any Tennessee team be in the last few seasons. And to me, with Butch Jones, and they're getting, you know, excitement around the program, and they've done pretty good on the recruiting trail as well, it's an upward trending team that's going to have a bright future. I don't know if it's going to be SEC, you know, title and national championship type future like we saw back in the Peyton Manning, T. Martin days under Phil Fulmer, but it's going to be a much better team than we've seen.
Yeah, the unbelievable support. Everyone's always, you know, during this sort of rocky period on Rocky Top, everyone has always mentioned, you know, what Tennessee could be, and 40,000 fans are showing up to greet the team as they're doing the Vol walk. I mean, it is, the support will be there and it will continue to come. Can you imagine how badly it stinks to be a Purdue fan and know you almost had Butch Jones?
Yes, but I don't think
Butch Jones could have helped Purdue.
Yeah, I think Purdue's got a good coach too. I don't think there's anything Butch Jones could have done with that current Purdue team to change much this season. That's just a bad team.
How much money do I need to pay you to watch Michigan State Purdue on a loop for 8 hours?
Wow. A lot, I'd say. To be honest, probably not that much, because I at a point I think I would just kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was so terrible. It's like watching a bad movie. You know, it's a terrible movie, but you like it anyway because you know it's terrible. So it probably wouldn't cost that much.
You would just start memorizing the lines. Like, oh, and here's the fourth punt.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they're punting from the other team's 30. All right.
But if we're going to talk about the Big Ten, I got to ask you this. Ohio State, they stay at number 4 in the polls. They get jumped by Florida State. I don't think after the performance, 51-14 in Death Valley again, there's a lot of argument. But the fact that it happened brought something up to me. Do you think that Ohio State is getting hurt with sort of letting some of these teams hang around? Last night, as you wrote, it wasn't really till the fourth quarter when Miller and Hyde kind of cut it on and just really finally sort of pulled away with the game. Is this going to end up hurting them down the road in a way, not necessarily with the pollsters, but just the fact that they don't take that Florida State annihilation method and they seem to keep things interesting? Do you think that makes it more likely that they're going to get caught off guard? Because frankly, like you said, we're 19-0. I mean, Urban has not lost as Ohio State's coach.
Yeah, no, it's generally been the way that Ohio State's played the entire time Meyer's been there. I mean, there have been some blowouts here and there, but most of the part, it's been that kind of game where Ohio State kind of just lets the other team linger, and then in the fourth quarter they close it out better than their opponent. But at some point you have to think it's going to catch up to them. I don't know if it'll catch up to them in the polls, because people still keep putting this team at number 4 for some reason. And it's like, when I look at the other undefeated teams and just compare the resumes of what they've done compared to what Ohio State's done, I don't understand how Ohio State gets ranked ahead of some of these teams. So I don't know how it'll affect them in the polls. But on the field, I mean, you look at the remaining schedule, and there's really not a game on there that you're, like, too concerned about. I mean, Penn State, maybe. Purdue and Illinois are on the road, but they shouldn't be losses for the Buckeyes. And you kind of see those last two games, it's like maybe Indiana, you know, kind of catches them off guard, because that offense that the Hoosiers have has been fantastic. And then the road trip to Michigan to finish the year, it's got to catch up to them at some point, because the fact is that as good as Braxton Miller can be at times and as good as Carlos Hyde is, Ohio State is, I don't know that they're really that much better than anybody else in the Big Ten at this point, because they haven't shown it. And
yeah,
like you're saying, before Florida State has its bad games, and it has, you know, where it plays down to opponent, but it also comes out with, you know, the 63-0 win against Maryland and the 51-14 win against Clemson to prove how good it is. Ohio State hasn't shown that. So you kind of have to doubt, you know, it's kind of hard to sit here and assume they're going to win out.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Cause I didn't want to have that misconstrued as a poll thing. I honestly believe the fact that they have not displayed a week-in, week-out killer instinct, you know, like everyone talks about the business-like approach. It's just sort of, you know, it feels very going through the motions.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you asked, I think Urban Meyer wouldn't say it publicly, but I think he would agree, because Urban Meyer's Florida teams, when they were at their peak, they were beating up people.
Yeah.
And this Ohio State team's not doing that. So I don't think he's going to complain about the fact that he's 19-0 through his first 19 games, but I think he knows he has work to do as well.
Well, two of those teams that you mentioned that absolutely can score some points and could make things very difficult on the Buckeyes on that back half of the schedule, Indiana and Michigan combined for over 1,300 yards. Devin Gardner sets a school record for total offense. Jeremy Gallen sets a Big Ten and school record with 369 receiving yards. Fitz Toussaint has a big day on the ground. By the end of this game, it was just sort of one of those silly, almost like old whack high, shootout games where the defenses are just so gassed. It really happens to do with if you just are in the right spot at the right time. It's basically the only way that any tackles were being made. But I wanted to make a note because you and I started, I guess we started the Rewind podcast last year, right?
Yes.
Remember like 4 weeks of, hey, there's the Indiana offense. Oh, where did the Indiana offense go? So, hey, this is the Indiana offense finally catching on.
Yeah, but unfortunately its defense is still not showing up in any game for it because offensively, this is an Indiana team that could win the Big Ten. Defensively, this is an Indiana team that could go winless in the MAC. You know what I mean? So it's a fun team to watch because the only type of game in the Big Ten that's going to, you know, if to have that kind of game in a Big Ten game, Indiana has to be one of the teams. It's not happening with anybody else. So they're fun to watch. But I think with just Michigan, I have absolutely no idea what to make of this team anymore. I don't know that they're good. I don't know that they're bad. I don't know that they're good on offense or if they're good on defense or if they're bad. I don't know what to expect from this team. I have no idea what to make of it.
So what do you make of the legends? Because Michigan State could have beaten Purdue bad, but did not.
Yeah, it's like I said last week, I thought Nebraska and Michigan State were, you know, the two clear-cut best teams in the division, but then Michigan State went and laid that egg against Purdue. And yeah, the weather was terrible and it was hard to work, but still, I mean, 14-0, and they didn't get their first touchdown until I think midway through the third quarter. So it's, I mean, Nebraska had the week off, so I guess that's good. We can't downgrade them as a team because they didn't play.
Can we? But, I think we can.
Yeah, we can. They probably screwed up in practice. So I'm a little more doubtful about them. No, it's the legends. I still think it's Michigan State and Nebraska are the top two, but Michigan could sneak up in there. I think the only teams we could really knock out are Iowa, which even though it looked good against Ohio State, they've got too many losses to really compete. And Northwestern and Minnesota have no chance either. I mean, that's the other thing too. Northwestern is now 0-3.
Yeah, like you said, man. It just since game day came, you know, they were so up for that Ohio State game. This is an epic. This is the most epic crash since that one time your friend went to like the 4-day music festival, and not Bonnaroo or like the one that everyone knows. It's like the one with all the obscure bands. That's really just a gathering in the mountains.
Yeah, they're just an excuse to like drink a lot and do drugs.
Yeah, this is a bad come down for Northwestern from a very very high right there when they had game day.
Yeah, and I mean that's an offense. It, you know, they didn't have Venrick Mark or Kane Coulter on Saturday, and it was obvious because that offense looked absolutely clueless without those two on the field. They could not, you know, Trevor Siemian, who's, you know, played well when splitting duty with Coulter at quarterback, is just, but having him run the entire offense did not work very well. That's because that Minnesota team that they didn't beat, they lost to, that's not a very good Minnesota team. And they made Northwestern look pretty damn bad.
Jordan Lynch, Northern Illinois quarterback, sets a quarterback rushing record with 316 yards on 32 carries in Northern Illinois' 38-17 win. The Huskies are 7-0 overall, currently ranked right there in the 20s. Do you think, first of all, do you think the Huskies are going to be able to get high enough in the rankings to be able to crash the BCS? I'm looking at Ball State as the only game that might be a loss for them and one that could be really, really good. And the second question, I have not made a decision yet, or I'm actually just asking for your input. CBSSports.com Offensive Player of the Week for Lynch, or do you go with Gallen or Gardner?
I would go, Man, that's a tough one because Gallen had such a huge game. I mean, he set records and Lynch set records. I think you have to go Coe this week if I'm going to be perfectly honest with you.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. I mean, we're writing the rules, so yeah, I mean, let's do it.
They won't fire us if we go Coe, will they?
I hope not.
No, but as for Northern Illinois, I mean, because the rest of their schedule, you know, I put out my my best worst 10, the worst teams in the country yesterday and today, and three of those 10 teams that are on the top, the worst 10 right now, remain on Northern Illinois' schedule. So it's easy to see where the really Ball State and that road game against Toledo are the only two real legit chances I think the Northern has to lose. But at the same time, Northern hasn't exactly been as impressive as it was last year. I mean, it lost to Iowa to start the year last year, but at least it was blowing teams out in MAC play. It's not doing that this year, even though it did beat both Iowa and Purdue. So I if this team does stay undefeated, it might sneak up into that, you know, that automatic BCS berth. But whereas last year I felt this team deserved it, I don't know that I would feel the same way this year.
Yeah. Moving out west to the Pac-12, this is a game, Tom, that would have been much higher on our rundown and likely also – The Washington-Arizona State game probably would have been higher on the rundown, but in my mind, Stanford's 24-10 victory over UCLA was so dominant. I didn't have a lot of a takeaway from that other than UCLA maybe missing Jordan James and just sort of overwhelmed by Stanford's defense, and look what happens when Stanford can get a rushing attack going.
Yeah, that was – Stanford did a great job of just shutting down Brett Hundley. You mentioned Jordan James being out as taking a weapon away from what the Bruins do on offense, and Stanford very much took advantage of that because Hundley really couldn't get anything going in that game yesterday. He was penned in the pocket for the most part, and when he did finally break free to get, like, you know, to run for the ball, he would get a first down, but it wasn't happening often enough to extend drives. And part of it to me seemed like Hundley was hesitant to run. Like, I don't understand what that was about. He was trying to stay in the pocket sometimes, but he probably should have vacated to try to pick up the first down. But overall, it was just a fantastic effort by Stanford's defense. Tyler Gaffney had a great day, 171 yards rushing and two touchdowns. The Cardinal finally got the ball going on. Got the ball going on the ground, so it was a dominant performance that really isn't reflected in the final score, because 24-10 looks kind of pedestrian, and the first half was only 3-0 3-0 at halftime. So it was Stanford's defense pretty much controlled it all along and just waited for the offense to finally show up in the second half.
Yeah, that's, and like I said, would have probably been earlier in the podcast because it was the 9-13 team, but it didn't look like an upset. It didn't look like the 9-13 team. It just looked like the Cardinal were just better, and they just played, you know, completely shut them out. As far as Washington goes, I'm chalking the 53-24 loss up to the old body blow theory, because they go Washington, you fall short against Stanford. You lose to at home to Oregon after getting, you know, that was your moment. Then you hit the road to Arizona State, and Taylor Kelly and Marion Grice, they have been able to score on pretty much everybody. It might take some time, but they're going to find a way to get touchdowns. Marion Grice leading the nation in scoring. How can UCLA avoid what's happened to Washington with these consecutive losses and sort of falling from Pac-12 title contention? Because now UCLA has to go to Oregon. They play Washington and Arizona State later, and they've still got USC.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because, I mean, I didn't see a whole lot of the Washington-Arizona State game yesterday, but from, like you were saying, from the little I did see, it generally looked like a Washington team that was just tired and beat up. And I'm not taking anything away from Arizona State, because Arizona State's proven that it's a good football team. So now UCLA is very much, as you said, they're facing the same situation. And I don't know, because the way Stanford dominated that offense, I feel like it kind of gave Oregon a bit of a blueprint on defense to slow it down. Although the Oregon defense did have, you know, wasn't that great in their game against Washington State last night. So maybe UCLA will find a better, find more success moving the ball, scoring on the Ducks than they did against Stanford. But still, that was a tough game. I think, you know, the Bruins are probably going to be feeling it this week, and then having to head on the road to play Oregon. It's going to be very hard for UCLA to get through this gauntlet of a schedule here to finish the season. And because of it, at this point, I would not be surprised if Arizona State is the team that ends up playing out of the South Division in the Pac-12 title game.
The feel-good Southern Cal party with Coach O sort of comes crashing down as the Trojans are shut out in the second half, and Notre Dame, they win?
Yeah.
Kind of win?
The score said they won. That was an ugly game too. There was a lot of ugly football being played in the Midwest yesterday in the rain. USC, there were some questionable decisions. It's like you kind of started to understand why Ed Orgeron's been a recruiter more than a head coach in his career, because Tommy Reese got hurt in the third quarter of that game and he didn't come back. And once Reese went out and Andrew Hendricks came in, Notre Dame could not move the football to save its life. All the points in this game were scored in the first half. The second half was no offense whatsoever. And USC had a couple of drives where, you know, it moved down the field and it got into field goal position. And they opted to try for the field goal, and they missed twice with Hedary, and they were 40-something yard field goals. And I didn't quite get it, because if you're facing an offense that you know can't move the ball right now, why not be more aggressive instead of trying to kick a 45-yard field goal? Go for the first down and get the touchdown that will give you the lead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, even if you fail, you're still
you're
going to
get the ball back in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of questionable coaching decisions on USC's part. I have a lot of questions about, you know, I know they lost Everett Golson with the academic situation before the season, which technically Reese would be their backup. But I'm surprised that Notre Dame with Brian Kelly, you know, who's run the kind of offenses that Kelly has run throughout his entire career, I'm shocked that they don't have another quarterback on that roster, apparently, who is capable of throwing the football, because Hendricks is not a throwing quarterback. And so it's like, I know Notre Dame got the win, but it's not the kind of, you know, it's not the kind of win where you're sitting there thinking, oh, the Irish, they're going to be just fine. They're going to go to a BCS bowl game. No, they're going to lose another two or three games this year.
Utah, after beating Stanford, goes on the road, loses to Arizona. Kadeem Carey is just a workhorse for that Wildcats offense, totals 236 yards. He has sets a school record for carries, and I think that is great for Kadeem Carey, first of all, but it is also very, very reflective of the Arizona offense and how badly they miss Matt Scott.
Yeah, I think Carey getting 40 carries says a lot more about B.J. Tinker than it does to Kadeem Carey. Yeah, I mean, and it works, so hell. I mean, if that's working, that's probably what Rich Rod should stick with for the rest of the year. A whole lot of Kadeem Carey, and then when that doesn't work, give the ball to Kadeem Carey some more until he breaks through. Because, yeah, B.J. Tinker throwing the football it's a pretty humorous exercise.
All right, Oregon State. When are you going to start? And again, I say this, but Oregon State faces Stanford this coming weekend. They go Southern Cal, Arizona State, Washington, Oregon. This schedule is unbelievably backloaded. But Sean Mannion putting up eye-popping numbers among the nation's leaders in several different passing metrics. How seriously are you taking them heading into this home stretch? And do you think that they would be able to beat a Stanford or Oregon and shake up the Pac-12 North?
I think they're going to pull off an upset at some point in these final five games. I think they're going to knock somebody off that we don't expect. I don't know that it would be, you know, it could be Stanford this week. It's in Corvallis, and Oregon State's been very good at home. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Beavers knock off Cardinal this week. But I don't think this is a team where, yes, Mannion, they're putting up fantastic numbers. Brandon Cooks is having a fantastic season catching the ball. But this, it's still a team that I think is destined for third place in the Pac-12.
All right, as we're coming down the home stretch, apologies to the Big 12, but it just really wasn't really a super interesting game. I was on game duty for the Eye on College Football for Kansas and Oklahoma, and I won't say that I contemplated quitting, but man, I came close.
Yes. That was, you know, I didn't see that game, but I was looking through the box score this morning. It was just kind of like, oh, wow, that had to be a good time.
Oklahoma loses that game against most opponents.
Yes.
But Kansas, they'll figure out a way to do it. Oklahoma, here's a question. Oklahoma State, do you think they got a quarterback change? Clint Shelf is able to come in and sort of get things started, even though he threw a pick. But TCU's offense has been strugglicious all season, continues to be. Texas Tech 7-0, Baylor 71-7, absolutely throttling Iowa State. Texas was off, but again, like we said last week on the Rewind, with the win over Oklahoma, they're right there at the top of the Big 12 standings. Who do you have the most faith in, or who do you have the most confidence in of all those teams in the Big 12? And if it's an obvious Baylor, I'd like to hear what your number two is.
It's an obvious Baylor at this point for me. I still expect them. It's like I've said every week, everybody in the Big 12 is going to lose at some point. I'm still convinced of that, but I think Baylor is pretty much the clear-cut best team in the conference right now, because especially after seeing how it bounced back. I mean, Iowa State's not exactly a great team, but still. But as far as the second-best team, I really don't know. I mean, it could be Oklahoma. It could be Texas. It could be Oklahoma State. It could be Texas Tech. Record-wise, it's Texas Tech, but I don't, you know, that's a 7-0 that I feel like it's a perilous 7-0. Like it's teetering like a Jenga tower with a little bit too many pieces pulled from the bottom. So it's, I guess I might almost say Texas. I don't know. It's unbelievable, but I might say Texas is the second best team in that conference right now.
Your logic is on. Like you said, it's just crazy. It's crazy to think about.
It doesn't make any sense, especially with how things started. But, I mean, if you put them on a neutral field, we already know Texas has beat Oklahoma on a neutral field. If you put Texas on a neutral field with Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, which way are you going right now?
I guess Texas Tech, but it means, I don't know.
There's arguments for all four of them, but that's the problem. There's arguments for all four of them.
I will say that getting to work, to have eyes on that Texas Tech game against West Virginia, my upset pick that did not happen. But I did come out of it with more confidence in the fact that whether it's Davis Webb or Baker Mayfield, the reason why everything is clicking and you're going to throw for 400 yards regardless is not just Cliff Kingsbury, but because they've got several players at the skill positions, whether it's Jason Morrow or Bradley Marquez as your wide receivers. Kenny Williams is a very good running back. I mean, there's in an offense that is trying to sort of spread you out and get people in space, that Texas Tech team seems to have the players and the personnel to do it, regardless of the quarterback, which, you know, as we've seen over here in the SEC East with all the quarterbacks hurt, that's something that is built to last an entire season.
Yeah, no, I'll agree. It's just like I said, it's still a perilous 7-0.
It's still perilous. Yeah. Okay, what about Central Florida gets the victory over Louisville? Teddy Bridgewater likely Heisman hopes dashed, BCS title hopes absolutely dashed. Can Louisville make it to a BCS bowl game? I'm looking at Central Florida's record down the stretch. They get Rutgers at home. They get Houston at home. And those are really the two most daunting opponents left.
Yeah. And Houston already lost yesterday, which it hurts their case. But, I mean, yeah, you can't take anything for granted in the American, because whether they call it the American, it's still the Big East. Let's be real. So anything strange can happen in the Big East on a week-to-week basis. So I don't think we could rule out Louisville winning this conference just yet and getting to a BCS bowl game. But that loss really, really hurt them, because UCF UCF might just really be the better team. That seems weird with what the preseason rankings, all that stuff were, but I mean, if you saw the coaches poll this week, it's kind of a joke how far UCF is rated behind Louisville in the rankings, considering it just beat them 3 days ago and it has the much better resume on paper. So I think UCF is the favorite right now, but I mean, like I said, this is the American. UCF could end up losing to freaking Temple on the road in mid-November, for all I know. It could finish the year with a loss at SMU.
StubHub says there's tickets available for that Temple game as low as $8.
Let's get us some and go.
All right, Tom, give me your we've already mentioned Jeremy Gallen and Jordan Lynch. And if you are listening to this on Sunday night, spoiler alert, they're going to be co-offensive player of the years on Monday afternoon. But what are some other individual performances that stood out to you?
This will be an inside joke between you, me, and Jerry Hinnon, but Will Sutton's performance really stood out to me this week.
Arizona State defense sacks Keith Price 7 times for 55 lost sack yards. Monstrous performance by that Arizona State front.
Yeah, you're damn right. And also, speaking of monstrous defensive linemen, I thought Stephon Tuitt had a fantastic game for Notre Dame. He was one of the bright spots in that game. We've mentioned Gallen and Gardner and Lynch. We'll mention them again. Kadeem Carey had a fantastic game. There's a few guys that deserve, you know, some laud for what they did there.
Are you Thursday night Miami? Are you concerned about the Hurricanes from going to North Carolina and really, really sputtering offensively? Stephen Morris throws 4 interceptions. Finally, they're able to get something going and just sort of gash the Tar Heels defense on the ground in the fourth quarter for 2 fourth quarter touchdowns to come back from 23-13 and win. Do they feel like a top 10 team to you?
Yes and no. I mean, they sure as hell didn't look like a top 10 team on Thursday night, but it's hard for me to say when there are 6-0 and undefeated at this point, that they with a win over Florida and win over, I guess, Georgia Tech is a nice win, if you want to call it that. They've played a very weak schedule, let's put it that way, but they still haven't lost, and a lot of teams have played weak schedules and lost. Hi, Louisville, how are you? So I think they deserve their ranking. I don't know that I consider them a top 10 team. I don't think they'll still be in the top 10 after, you know, they play Florida State in a couple weeks. But for right now, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's for my answer to that would be they'll get a chance to prove it. At Florida State versus Virginia Tech, Hurricanes, if you come out of that 1-1, you probably deserve a second shot at the Noles in the ACC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
What happens if Miami beats Florida State like 54-7?
And then loses to Virginia Tech like 9-6?
Yeah. I think that's the most like the logical. I think if A happens to B, that's what C will be right there.
Now, here's what happens. If they beat Florida State and Virginia Tech, they 100% either lose at Duke or at Pittsburgh on the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Tino Sunseri, like, just comes out of the locker room at that Pittsburgh game. No eligibility, but it doesn't matter. He comes out and throws 5 touchdowns to lead the Panthers to victory.
That's the game. Miami's played Boston College sometimes on that Friday, and it's just a weird
Thanksgiving Friday. It's the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's sort of a weird vibe. You don't have students there.
No,
never mind. You don't have students at Miami games anyway.
Nor Pittsburgh game. So, I mean, you're full of turkey and all this stuff. So you're sluggish. Nobody really cares. You're still kind of tired. You're right. It leads to some odd football games.
Yes, indeed. My thanks for sticking around. This was a very hefty Rewind podcast, but it was a very big weekend of college football. A reminder that we are sort of building up all of the Offensive Player of the Week, the awards that we mentioned, our midseason awards package last week, leading up to the announcement of the CBSSports.com All-Americans. It will be unveiled in coordination with the CBS Sports Network on December 17th, so make sure to circle your calendar for that. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.